Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are live at the 46th Annual Congressional Black Caucus here at the Washington Convention Center. Certainly an important time for African Americans to be politically engaged. And certainly if you have been on the fence about the importance of the vote this weekend, this is an opportunity to hear from your Capitol Hill representatives, as well as critical people who are involved in the community, such as my guest Avis Jones DeWeaver, also Kevin Carr. We're going to continue the conversation. So please give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We will try to take as many phone calls as we can, so stay with us. Fred, line five. Thanks for calling, Fred. What's on your mind?
Yes. My thing is that right now we're falling into the same trap that the news media is falling into with Donald Trump.
Why do you say that?
We're making Donald Trump so important, and we're missing a lot of the issues that he's not – he doesn't play straight, and he just says stuff that keeps him in the news. And as long as we let that happen – we won't be able to hold him accountable for anything.
Fred, hold on, though. You said that Donald Trump is not important. I argue that he is important. He is extremely important because there is still a chance that he could be president of the United States. This has nothing to do with whether you like the man or not. But the reality is that he is the GOP nominee, and he was important before that, because you got to remember there were 16 other people running for the GOP nomination, and they fell like dominoes.
But I think that the point that he's making, and I have to agree with him here, is that he's arguing that the media is allowing Donald Trump to drive the media cycle. Mm. And that's true. It goes from one train wreck to another train wreck to another train wreck in terms of his shenanigans. And so what happens is we continue to cover all the craziness that he says, and he's never really held to the table. Where the hell are his taxes?
Yeah, and certainly that, you know, that's another thing, because a lot of people don't know that, you know, the first president to release his taxes, Richard Nixon, mm-hmm. and he really set, set the standard for doing that. And so now we've kind of come full circle where it's very likely that we're not going to see that. But Fred, thank you so much for your phone call. I want to go back to Kevin, because Kevin, you represent a critical issue as it relates to our athletes and economics. Talk to me a little bit about why is it that we are still hearing, with the millions and millions, tens of millions of dollars that pro athletes make, that some of them afterwards they leave and they're broke. And you're talking about developing CEOs. I'm talking about just developing guys and women who can keep roofs over their heads when their playing days are over. What's going on with that?
Well, I mean, we had the young man from the story Survivor's Remorse here, mm-hmm. The show on Starz, and he kind of really captures some of the ups and downs and the highs and lows of being a superstar celebrity or just being in the business of sports and entertainment. Part of it is prior to what happens when you come into this. It's a syndrome called sudden wealth syndrome. It, mm-hmm. it happens with lotto people and some athletes themselves. Where you come into something like this, and it's like almost so much that it just seems like you're going to have it and it's never going to run out. You don't tend to use a sort of minimalist type of mentality.
In other words, they go crazy.
They go crazy.
Yeah, there
exactly.
it is. Yeah.
And crazy means you overspend, you don't save, you don't appropriate in the right place.
And you buy your mama a house, and you buy your cousin a house, and you buy cars and everything else.
Well, it comes down to choice management and decision making. And to be prudent, you have to discipline yourself like you've done as an athlete or actor, actresses. You've done that in that talent space, but in these other areas where you have to use restraint around fiscal responsibility, that's not been an expertise. Okay?
So how do you get that message to them?
So the message has to be one that really is right on their level. We can't be talking stocks, bonds, all this other stuff up here when someone really isn't that strong in their sort of saving strategy and their
that financial
balancing.
Literacy piece.
Just the bottom line. So what happens when you come into a lot of this, you're just really not accustomed to saying, you know, $100 is $100. Not when you're making that much money. It's actually taxed almost at 50%. So you don't have $100. You have $50. Mm-hmm. So when you spend like you have $100, and then when Uncle Sam comes around, you're behind. You know, those are things that we're seeing that should not happen. They should have proper advisement and really good coaching around spending with discipline. It's about not what you spend, what you keep. And we haven't been able to convey that early enough. It really has to happen before you get an MBA contract. Mm-hmm. It really has to happen when you have people around you. And most of our athletes have not had anyone in their cycle who has made that kind of money. They become the dad, the mom, the leader, the prince, the king in their family.
And it seems to me that there definitely needs to be some role models in that vein. I need to go back to the phone lines, though. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tony on the line. Tony, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
How you doing? My question was pretty much answered by that gentleman, but even though these athletes make millions and millions of dollars, they're still not in the same category as the owners.
Uh-huh. Tony, are you there?
No, we heard you, and I agree with you on that. What was the rest of your question?
I think we may have lost Tony. Okay. Tony, give us a call back if you can. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Avis, talk to me a little bit. We were just talking about leadership, mm-hmm. and you know, and that is your wheelhouse as it relates to women. And is it possible that pro athletes that are women, you know, the Serena Williams of the world and the women of the WNBA and others may need to take the reins to show the guys that it can be done
in terms of financial
stability, as well as making some ownership moves and the like, because, you know, Serena Williams, you know, arguably the wealthiest black female athlete around right now.
Right.
Let me jump in. They mm-hmm. are owners. They yes. own a small stake in the Miami Dolphins.
And that's exactly what I mean.
Absolutely. And Serena, Venus and Serena, they're really in a class by themselves. I mean, really. Yeah, they are just extraordinary, not only athletes, but business women. And I believe that they have sort of approached the game even from that mindset. They just came in it with a completely different mindset, I think completely different goals. And they've always expressed entrepreneurial pursuits. I mean, they're just different. I think their situation is very different from women in the WNBA, who are severely underpaid as compared to their male counterparts in other professional sports. And probably I would suspect, I haven't researched it, but I would suspect they probably go through very similar situations that their male counterparts do in terms of professional sports.
Yeah, we just had a summit here at the CBC called the Sustaining Success Summit. And in our audience were a large percentage of the team members from the Washington Mystics.
I believe it.
And within that audience, they came to really be educated about what should they be preparing for because of their upcoming transition. Some of them just coming into the league, but not knowing how long they're going to play. I applaud those young women for coming in and hearing from people like Paxton Breaker, who is a minority owner in MLB, and what his early strategies as a young athlete were, because mm-hmm. he never played any pro ball, but he became a businessman and understood the game beyond the game. So for a lot of them, they're going to have that limited opportunity, but there's also opportunity unlimited on the other side. And mm-hmm. we have to get very prudent and very skilled about how do we leverage a WNBA brand, because not everybody gets a chance to do that. So there is some upside in doing that, mm-hmm. and they just came this afternoon to really experience what other people are doing in other industries to help lead and develop themselves in a field of business and industry. So I applaud them. I think there are some things happening for them.
I've got to go back to the lines. I've got another birther question coming up. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Marie on the line. Thanks for calling, Marie. What's your comment or question? Marie, are you there? Give us a call back if you can, Marie. I want to, when we're talking about that birther issue, and I just find it, you know, really, really, you know, fascinating. In that, you know, we had the gentleman who said that, you know, Donald Trump is not, you know, particularly important, but I think that for those people who are on the fence about voting, those who are still wondering whether or not their vote counts, I think that if you don't like the guy, that this is an opportunity for you to register, for you to stand up. Certainly, this is one of the things that we're talking about here at the Congressional Black Caucus this year. But even if you are perhaps a Republican or something, there are some down ballot issues that are still going to be important to you. That means that you need to get up and vote.
Absolutely. I mean, I do have Republican friends who still can't stand Donald Trump.
Okay.
And they're very concerned that he is taking their party in a direction from which they will have a very difficult time coming back from. They really believe that he's ripping the party apart, to be very frank. And so they're concerned about him. And they have the same sort of moralistic qualms with him that many of us on the left do, because they do also see him as a pathological liar, a con man, and someone who's racist. And so they don't want to sort of rubber stamp that either. So for all of those reasons, not to even mention his temperament, his inability to really admit mistakes and to apologize when appropriate, his complete lack of understanding of the world, his strange bromance with Putin, and not to mention all of these things, and the possibility of him potentially having the nuclear codes, which is absolutely frightening to me. I don't understand why there would be any reason why anyone would sit down for this particular election, not just as it relates to the presidential ticket, but as you mentioned, all the way down ballot, because a lot of the issues that we in the Black community particularly care about as it relates to police brutality and things of that nature, education, a lot of those are most significantly impacted by local elections. So definitely vote for president so that we can particularly save this country from this strange individual who is very scary to me in many respects. But also vote all the way down the ballot so that we can have prosecutors who will actually prosecute policemen when they kill unarmed Black people in the streets.
Let me go back to the phone lines. Marie is back. Marie, are you there? Marie, are you there? What's on your mind? Okay, we don't have Marie. The thing that I do want to bring up, because we've been doing a lot of talking about Donald Trump, but I think the reality is some of the polls are now suggesting that in some key states that Hillary Clinton is dropping.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, what we've seen now is a tightening of the polls. It's very interesting. We had a convention season where we saw some historic changes. We've never seen a convention in terms of the RNC where after the main candidate gives his speech, the ratings for that candidate actually decreases instead of increases. So, you know, in many respects, the RNC convention was a dud. On the other end of the spectrum, the DNC convention was well received, and Hillary received a significant bounce after that convention, put her well ahead in the polls overall, as well as in several key states, even had her leading in a lot of red states, places like Georgia, even Texas, you know, some very places that Democrats have not won in a long, 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 long time. But what we're seeing now is that we had a significant period of time where Hillary was focused on fundraisers and not doing as many pressers, not really out there. And as we've spoke about previously, Trump is constantly in the news, and he's been able to solidify his support, and unfortunately, it seems to grow it.
I need to take a break. I do want to thank Kevin Carr for spending some time with us, pro to CEO. We really appreciate some of his insight and his comments. When we come back, we're going to talk about some things that are going on in black barbershops across this nation. More than haircuts. Stay with us. Lines are still open. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're live at the 46th Annual Congressional Black Caucus Foundation event here at the Washington Convention Center. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue the conversation live at the 46th Annual Congressional Black Caucus Foundation. Of course, we're live here at the Washington Convention Center. Lots to talk about. We're going to switch gears and talk about an education initiative that is very, very interesting, very, very creative. And I'd love to drill down a little bit on this here in studio here at the convention center. I have with me Alvin Irby. He is the CEO of Barbershops Books. It's a literacy program to encourage boys to read in barbershops. Alvin, thank you so much for joining this conversation. Talk to me about the genesis of this project and what do you want to see come out of it?
So barbershop books came out of an experience I had when I was teaching first grade in the Bronx in New York City. I was a first grade teacher, and one day after school, I was getting a haircut across the street from my school, and one of my first graders walked into the shop and was just kind of sitting there, kind of doing nothing for 10 or 15 minutes, just staring around, looking bored. And all I could think of was he should be practicing his reading right now. He was my student, and I knew what his reading level was. And so it was at that moment that I wished I had some children's books with me that I could have given to him to read. And it was really at that moment that the idea for barbershop books was born. Now we have reading spaces in 39 barbershops in 11 cities and 11 states. And that's just our program. We've inspired, several kind of similar programs in other cities across the country.
How did you get, you said 39?
39, yeah.
39 cities or 39 barbershops?
39 barbershops across 11 cities in 11 states, yeah.
How did you do that? Because certainly we've seen these similar kinds of initiatives when you're talking to black men about voting, about black health initiatives like prostate cancer and these other kinds of things. But the reading piece is new.
Yeah, so, we've had some really instrumental partnerships with KidCraft and Scholastic that have allowed us to be able to ship our colorful bookshelves and curated list of books pretty much to any barbershop in the country. Right now, anyone, a church, a school, a parent, a barber, could go onto our website, barbershopbooks.org, and for $175, they could sponsor a child-friendly reading space in their local barbershop. And we'll ship 30 books and the bookshelf to any barbershop in the country. Because of the partnerships, we've been able to have the capacity to be able to ship anywhere. And that's what's allowed us to kind of move beyond just being in New York City.
Mm-hmm. How has this been received by barbers and the owners of barbershops?
Barbers and barbershop owners have really been excited and happy to have the program there. I mean, one, they don't want kids running around their shop.
Yeah.
Sit down and read a book, is something that they are saying to the kids. But, from our end, our mission is really to help young black boys and other boys of color to identify as readers. And the way that we're doing that is by connecting books and reading to a male-centered space and by involving men in boys' early reading experiences. What we want at the end of the day is for boys to say three words: I'm a reader. We believe if we can create the type of reading experiences that lead young boys to say those three words, then they will read for fun. And if a child reads for fun, they will become a proficient reader.
You were in the classroom.
Yeah, I was a kindergarten and first grade teacher in New York City.
Okay. What was your experience when it comes to looking at young black boys and how they tackle the reading issue? This is why I ask, because at the other end of the spectrum, at my age, I'm 52, all of my, you know, my buddies. End. Yeah, my buddies, you know, college educated, but even now today, they do not read. They can, they read well, but they don't do it unless it's the newspaper or the you know, something online. But there's no reading for information. There's no reading of books. So what happens?
I really think it's a cultural thing. You know, I think that, you know, from a young age, you know, what I learned teaching kindergarten and first grade is that at the end of the day, kids just want to be grown. So whatever they see the grown people in their lives doing, that's what they conclude it means to be a part of their family or to be a part of their community. And today, you know, less than 2% of black of teachers in the United States are black males, and a majority of black boys are raised by single mothers. And so, you know, we have a situation where lots of little boys, you know, don't see black men modeling reading in school, and then they get home and they're not really seeing reading modeled in the home. And so, you know, a lot of people are like, well, why aren't black boys reading? And the question I ask people is, why should they read? Because their young white female teacher is telling them that reading is important. You know, if you don't see something, then it really doesn't become a part of your kind of realm of possibility. And that's what Barbershop Books is trying to do, is to really expand what children and families and barbers and communities see as possible as it relates to reading.
Does that mean that more black men do need to step up with their sons or young boys that they may have positive influence over to read? Because even here at the CBC, the majority of the authors at the Authors Pavilion are women. Okay, number one. Number two, when you talk about book clubs of any stripe, there are very, very, very few, if any, men in book clubs.
You don't hear a guy saying, yo, son, about to go to this book club real quick.
Right.
Talk about this book with my dudes right now. No, you don't hear that really.
So as a teacher, and you know, I believe once an educator, always an educator, what did you do to encourage them beyond the assignment? And what advice do you have for parents, right, whether they be single mothers or two parent households or whatever, to get their boys to read?
Well, one of the first things I would say is that reading is reading. I've spoken to a number of mothers who are like, oh my God, I'm trying to get my son to stop reading these comic books and read some real books. And what I tell them is that comic books are real reading material. If it has print on it, it's reading. And so I would encourage parents to definitely let children read whatever they are interested in, regardless of the medium, the platform. If they like reading sports magazines, if they like reading about athletes, if they like reading silly, gross, funny, whatever it is that boys or girls like to read, let them read it. Too many boys find that the things that their teachers use for instructional purpose or the reading material that's valued in class are not the kinds of things that they like. A lot of young boys like silly, funny, gross stuff, and a lot of times that's not what's used during lessons. And so if that happens enough, or a kid is discouraged enough from reading something, then they may start to kind of conclude that, oh, well, actually, this isn't reading. This stuff that I like actually isn't reading. And if that happens for a sustained period of time, well, then a child might conclude, well, I'm not a reader. Mm-hmm. And that's really a dangerous thing in a society that's knowledge-based, where it's in order to progress, you have to be able to read to learn, not just learn to read. A lot of people get stuck in the, you know, learning to read and never really transition into reading to learn. To address this issue, you know, I actually decided to write my own children's book.
Okay.
It's coming out this fall. It's called Gross Greg. You can find out more information at grossgreg.com. But it's a funny story about a little black boy who loves eating his boogers.
Oh, my God.
We call them boogers, but Gross Greg calls them delicious little sugars.
Oh, my goodness. But that's the kind of thing that you were talking about, because that's boy stuff. It's boy stuff. How do you compete with PlayStations, with Xboxes when it comes to reading?
It comes down to what I said earlier about kids wanting to be grown. If the grown people in their life are showing and modeling that reading is something that's valued in their community, if reading is something that's valued in their home, then children want to do what they see modeled. So I would say, you know, parents want to know, what can they do? Well, parents used to ask me all the time when I talk kindergarten, what can I do to get my son reading? And I ask, well, how often does he see you reading? They're like, oh, no, we try and read to him a few times a week. And I say, no. Not how often do you read to him. How often does he see you reading? Mm-hmm. Are there opportunities where he just sees you sitting down in the living room with a book reading for pleasure? And the reality is, it's those types of modeling experiences that are going to kind of plant those seeds for children that reading is something that's important. But definitely reading to children as much as possible, using environmental print. When you're on the subway, you're on the bus. When you're on the subway, when you're on the bus, when you're walking down the street, there are awnings, there are signs, there are all types of kind of print that's up around us that we can use to kind of inspire and excite kids about reading. And so you don't have to just be stuck with a book, but use all the print we see in our everyday lives, whether that's the back of a cereal box or a candy wrapper.
Okay. And one of the things I want to ask you before I close, why are you here at CBC?
I am here because I received an invitation to the African-American Mayors Association reception that's happening today. And I want to make sure that I am letting people in positions of power who are in a position not just to put a single reading space in a barbershop, but to potentially put reading spaces across entire cities. You know, and so that's how we began to close the reading achievement gap. And that's how we began to really improve reading outcomes for our young black boys.
Well, I want to thank you, Alvin Irby,
for
sharing. What's your website again for this?
For Barbershop Books. Yeah. You can get more information at barbershopbooks.org. You can sponsor a reading space or make a donation, or just tell us about a book that your young black boy or boy of color loves to read. We want to hear from you.
Well, Alvin, thank you so much. I also want to thank Kevin Carr and Dr. Avis Jones-DeWeaver, who were gracious enough to spend some time with us here at the 46th Annual Congressional Black Caucus. That is the Daily Drum for this Friday, September 16th. I'm Harold Fisher. Of course, you can reach me at hfisher at whur.com, on Facebook at Harold Fisher WHUR, or Twitter at Daily Drum.